Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 8th of October. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined in studio by producers Logan Rausch and Paul Perreault, who do such a great job keeping the sound running smoothly, the news flowing throughout the morning as we listen together, joining together from around our country to talk about relevant news items, special interest topics with guests from around our country. We'll do so from the perspective of a real faith and a genuine hope. If you listen regularly, I love it when people like Bruce Ashford come on the show and talk about the fact that we may enjoy a specific news outlet like a Fox News or a CNN, but we have to be careful not to be discipled by them. We really want to keep our eyes and our mind and our hearts fixed on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And so that's what we'll do here each morning on Faith Radio Mornings. And our guests might have different angles and different perspectives, but we'll share that faith together. And of course, as we do the show, we love hearing from all of you as listeners. And if you want to join the show, you can certainly call in at any time or text the studio at 877-933-2484. Or you can head to our Facebook page for Faith Radio Mornings and post some messages there. I'd be happy to respond. Love the first hour of our show. Brandon Showalter, the Christian Post, joined us first, and he's going to actually be in the White House tonight at the swearing-in process of Justice Kavanaugh. So we'll get a ground-level view from Brandon, I'm sure, later, maybe this week or the first part of next week, about what it was like to be in the White House there. And, of course, Adam Carrington, professor of political science at Hillsdale College, joins us, and he talked quite a bit about what we can anticipate moving forward in our country with the difficult and sometimes troubling culture wars that seem to be on the increase. So great first hour if you want to catch that show. It'll be podcasted up on our Faith Radio Mornings Facebook page as well as myfaithradio.com. Well, I see on the line that we're going to be joined by Eugene Robinson here next, and Eugene is a 16-year veteran of the NFL. He provides color commentary for the Carolina Panthers right now. Quite a historic moment yesterday in the Carolina Panthers game. 63-yard field goal that won the game. I'll ask Eugene about that. I also wanted to have Eugene on the program as part of a new faith and sports segment where we can talk with professional athletes and people involved in the professional world of sports and do so from a different angle, which has to do with maybe their philanthropy or how their faith is active in their life. And Eugene is part of a Man Up ministry that really does focus on the fatherless epidemic in our country. And listen to some podcasts about the situation and Eugene speaking about it, and really compelling material. You won't want to miss it next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 8 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined in the line by Eugene Robinson, who's the color commentator for the Carolina Panthers, also spent 16 years as a defender in the NFL. Good morning, Eugene. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. How you doing? Good morning.
Well, doing well. Are you a little bit weary, I would imagine, from yesterday's game? There was quite a bit that happened there, including, and we'll play the clip here, of a pretty historic moment at the end where your Carolina Panthers came through. Logan, let's play that.
Ball is placed down. Dano from 63 yards out. It is good!
Now, Eugene, I covered the Minnesota Timberwolves for about 10 years, and I found myself having to remain as dispassionate as possible, even though I was a fan of the Timberwolves. Did you at least celebrate a little bit in the booth yesterday when that was going on?
Oh, man, absolutely. I mean, we were going crazy in the booth. There was no doubt because, first of all, it's almost improbable a little bit. You look at a 63-yard field goal at that time, you go, oh, yeah, you know you can do it. You know you can do it in practice. But during the game is a different story. And the way that the New York Giants have fought back to get into that game and to take the lead with like a minute left in the game, it was astounding. And then to have us even get close in position. I was hoping for a 52-yard field goal, a 53-yard field goal, but not a 63, because I'm like, man, last time I've seen that was back in the day when I was a kid, and I think it was Dempsey who kicked it. And so from that standpoint, I'm going, man, this is almost improbable, but this would be a great win if we were able to accomplish that. And when it started to fade back inside, I'm like, hold up, I think he has this. He has enough distance. I think he has the angle. And the bowl inside Bank of America Stadium erupted. I mean, it was loud. It was boisterous. It was chaotic. It was noise. It was appropriate and fitting for a wonderful end for the Carolina Panthers. And so it was indeed an historic event. And Graham Gano, in Graham Gano fashion, raises his hand up to the Lord and thanks God. That's what he's been doing all year long. So, I mean, it was a great win for us. And as a commentator and as a fan of football, I got to be a part of something that was historic.
Well, it was sure fun to watch. I have to admit that when I watched the highlights, I got chills just at the bedlam erupting in the stadium there. Wait, you know, was there part of you during the game when the Giants were coming back, you thought, you know, I could strap on the gear again and get back out there and shut down Beckham Jr.? I mean, they've got to stop the Giants, you know, attack at some point.
Odell Beckham Jr., I tell you what, ODB was he was sensational. I mean, you gotta be able to limit what he does, but you're not going to really stop him. And there were a couple of double move routes, and particularly towards the end of the game where he gets behind the secondary and corrals in for a Heath touchdown. He was sensational, but he wasn't the only person that you had to stop. Because don't forget, the offensive line is still blocking, and they did a really good job of protecting Eli Manning after coming into that game giving up 15 sacks. And so I thought the offensive line had a lot to prove, and by giving Eli Manning some time, and Eli Manning was able to really connect in some big ways. Fortunately for us, it turned out with the Graham Gano, it turned out in our favor, but that game could easily swung in the balance because the Giants did an awesome job of coming back and getting back in the game.
It's Eugene Robinson, who's the color commentator of the Carolina Panthers. And Eugene, I appreciate you coming on this morning. This is part of some of our news segment that has to do with faith and sports and just the intersection of the two. And before we get into some of the topics on fatherlessness, I know that as I'm sort of walking around in circles with young families and their kids are getting involved with football, that there's been increasing headlines about the potential danger of concussions. And maybe a generation ago it was just getting your bell rung and heading back into the field. Give us some sense of sort of the insider view of how significant the concussion issue might be, or is it being overplayed, or what is your take on this, Eugene?
Well, when I started playing back in 1985, you mentioned about getting your bell rung, and then you would get some smelling salts, and then you would get right back in the game. But no longer is that the protocol. The NFL has really made a concerted effort to really try to minimize it with the hits, because I remember back in the day, I could target you. I could hit you right in the face with my helmet back in the day. And now you can't. You can't even do that on a defensive receiver or a player at any time where you can hit a guy with the shoulder, even when you're going for a legal hit. Even some of the hits I've seen today where I would say, hey, that's the kind of a legal hit. They've been called questionable hits where they've been flagged. And all of the effort to really minimize and to mitigate this thing of concussions, because they don't want concussions to lead to CTE, which a lot of some of the older players are experiencing. The only thing you get to know about it is when they die that they have CTE. Mm. And so from that standpoint, the NFL has this big concerted effort to go ahead and see what they can do to mitigate, minimize what they can, and to improve player safety. I applaud them for that. I mean, I definitely applaud them for that, because I see that the game has turned away from a lot of the hits that I was accustomed to. I mean, I could hit you in the face. And back in the day, I could hit you in the face. And what are you going to do about it legally? But I could do that. Now, no longer. And I think rightfully so, because if you want to preserve the game, if you want to keep what we got, some semblance of what football is, you better be able to address this issue of concussions. Now, you're not going to be able to stop them all, but if you show a concerted effort to minimize that, at least you get to stay in the ball game, because here it is. Moms and dads are not going to let little junior play ball if it's at risk for their life, is at risk for something else. And so you got to be able to address that. And so I think the NFL has been able to address that. And going forward, you see that matriculating down, going from the college and the high school and hopefully into Pee Wee sports that we do some. I love the game of football, so I'm a proponent of football. And I love the game of football. I've had maybe 3 concussions in my career. I played 16 years. And I'm talking about my career through college and high school, college, and pro. I had 3 out of all that, from high school, college, and pro. and that's a lot of football, but I think that's three too many. And so hopefully we can minimize that, and I think the NFL is taking steps to get that done. And so we'll see as it moves forward.
Well, and I think it's important to not deter our young people to get into the game of football. And we have about a minute before a break. Eugene, I'd be curious your take in terms of what you've learned as a person of character, as a person of faith. What kind of lessons can be derived if we do have our young kids in football? I mean, there's really teamwork, there's character, there's diligence, there's perseverance. What would you say is one of your main takeaways from being a football player and how it can impact our sense of faith?
Oh, I always say, well, look, you got to obey the rules, man. Romans 13 is really implicit. I mean, it's really explicit about you obeying the rules and obeying your government authority. And you have to do that because there's oftentimes in a football game, there's oftentimes when you want to go ahead and do your own thing because somebody did you wrong in the game and you want to go ahead and take revenge. I'm a high school coach. I saw it with a couple of my guys the other day in the high school football game. Well, a guy started hitting a guy and he started cursing at one of my players, and he wanted to take revenge. And I had to remind him, I said, hey, dude, it's the easiest thing is to do that because you feel that you've been assaulted and you feel that that you've been wrong. I said, the hardest thing right now is to obey the government authorities and to not do what your impulse is telling you to go and do. If I can give you anything of pause, is, hey, think about what you're about to do right now. I said, and not do it. Think about that. I said, because I'm going to tell you as your coach, I said, hey, man, play the game the right way. And don't get into that banter. Don't get into no fisticuffs. I said, I need you to do that. And so from that standpoint, football will test you. It will test your moral fiber. It will test your constitution because there's plenty of times when you want to take matters into your own hands. And I'm telling you, based on what I know from the Lord, don't do it.
It's Eugene Robinson of the Carolina Panthers with some great advice about why, especially if we can deal with some of the concussion issues, why football can be such an important part of the character and the faith development of our kids. Eugene, when we come back from break, I would love to get your take on this Man Up ministry that you've been a part of, but also just in general, your passion for fathers in our country and the epidemic of fatherlessness. You have some personal story around that as well, and what you see about hope moving forward for men in our country. So more to come with Eugene Robinson next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, where we're having a fun conversation with Eugene Robinson, 16-year veteran of the NFL, as well as the current commentator for the Carolina Panthers, as part of our new Faith and Sports segment in which we talk with professional athletes about their faith, about perhaps their philanthropic work. And Eugene, before the break, we referenced that you've been doing quite a bit of work and have quite a bit of passion for fathers in our country. I listened to a podcast that you had done, and I was really compelled by some of what you had to say and the insights shared relative to the need for dads in our community. So talk our listeners through a little bit about what you see in the situation.
Well, I was just kind of thinking, just kind of to myself right now, can you imagine for we as Christians, Adam not having a dad in the Lord Jesus Christ and God? Can you just imagine that?
Yeah.
I mean, the Bible talks about that God walked with Adam. He walked with him. We see what Adam's doing. We see that he's naming animals, and we see his intellect, and we see that he's coupled with his wife Eve, and you get a chance to see that, and then when you hear see the sin, and you hear them hiding from God, and you hear God saying to them, Adam, where are you? I already know where you are, but I want to know if your heart still belongs to me. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine not having God to be Adam's father during that time? And if we extrapolate that, move that forward, can you imagine a kid growing up with a dad, without dad? Now, I understand from just circumstances where people just, pass away and things of that nature. But when dads some of the time abdicate their role as being father and take themselves out of the house, you leave a major void. You leave a huge void that's in there now. Now you're asking kids to fend for themselves. I think it's almost unfair to ask someone to fend for themselves, to go ahead and be guided and trying to make the right moves and the right steps and without having a blueprint to go ahead and to do that. And so that's one of the reasons, I kind of maybe got involved here with the Man Up. Mike Thomason, from the head coach from the Pittsburgh Steelers, is a program that they had up in Pittsburgh, is a program that they brought down here in Charlotte. Another good friend of mine, who's a broadcaster for the Tony Okun for the Pittsburgh Steelers, he told me, "Hey, Gene, you got to get involved with Man Up. You got to get involved with Man Up. It's talking about restoring fathers and a movement of getting fathers back in the home, if they could get back in the home. And this is about being a father to your own family, being a father to your own community, and where fathers get together. And I thought about this. I said, oh, my goodness, because my own story kind of resonates with that. My dad was a father in the house, but they got divorced when I was 18. And I remember how things were kind of rocky when I was younger. And I kind of remember was sometimes when my dad would be absentee and sometimes he would be present. And having that fluctuation in a child's life, it allows you to go ahead and fend for yourself and make mistakes that sometimes typically you probably wouldn't make if your dad was present. Well, I kind of vowed that I don't want to make those same mistakes, the things that I was subjected to from that standpoint. So it kind of resonated with me. And although my dad has passed away, although I love my father dearly, and I was a part of him becoming a believer and was a part of him actually baptizing my dad later on in his life, I remember how it was a little void and sometimes how I was angry and how I was mad. And from that standpoint, I don't want a child growing up. And too often in the black community where I grew up, in the hood where I grew up, there was a lot of fathers that weren't there. And there was a lot of kids that kind of went their own way and did their own thing. Some of them living, some of them who are not living to this day. So that standpoint, it was an easy thing for me to get involved in. To man up. It was easy because it resonated with me, and I wanted to do what I could to help mitigate that and help just erase that, eradicate what we could, and this fatherlessness that we see in this kind of like taking not doing your role as a dad or as a husband or as a father to go ahead and be the man in your house. Kids are looking for some direction. I don't care whether it's your daughter or whether your son, they're looking for direction. I don't care what you say. You can say it in Spanish. People are looking for direction, and that is part of your office. The greatest office you're going to have is if you're able to father a child. The greatest office you will have is being a dad. That would be the greatest office you would have. That imparts life, and that imparts life that continues to go on and move on and move on. And how you do that and why you do that, it would determine what your son or what your daughter ultimately will go ahead and have to go ahead and cling to or not cling to or mold or shape them. So it's a huge issue for me as far as fatherlessness is concerned.
And it's well said, and it cuts across racial and demographic lines as well in terms of the fatherlessness. And Eugene, you referenced that you are currently a football coach, and I'd be curious. It piqued my interest when I was listening to you on the podcast talk about the fact that we can be fathers in our communities as well. And I know it doesn't entirely take the place of a father in a family per se, but can you talk a bit about your experience about having a fatherly role maybe for young people that didn't have a father in the household, even if you weren't their biological father?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, because I'm a high school coach, so you, as a high school coach, you end up doing it. Coaching is ministry. You just need to know that. Coaching and teaching is ministry, and you got to be called to be a coach, I believe. But as a coach, man, I'm with kids every single day. And I had one of my kids go through a divorce during his senior year. He was one of my best track athletes, and things just weren't going right, and I could tell that something was wrong. And I'm like, I come to my man, I say, hey, what is going on? And he said, Coach Rob, let me just tell you what's going on with my family, this and that, and I'm trying to keep things together. I got young siblings and trying to keep this thing together. And then I got to share my story with them. And I got to share my story with them about, hey, I'm at the point in time where I didn't like my dad, but when I became a Christian, it totally changed how I felt. And God said to me, if I can forgive you for all the stuff that you've done, you surely can forgive your dad for what he's done. And I said, man, I'm going to ask that you let forgiveness rule in your heart as you kind of navigate through this whole process. I said, look, if you need time to take off, if you need to go ahead and not run, if you need to do whatever you need to do, I am in your corner. I said, no doubt about it. I said, and if you're having a bad day and nobody knows, I said, just give Coach Rob a little shout out. Just lift your hand up. Man, you're already excused. You can just go on. Don't even worry about it. You're already excused. And if you need to pray, let's go ahead. We'll go ahead and pray. And so that standpoint, I take my role as a coach very, very seriously because you get to minister. And that's just only one example of how you'll be able to minister while I'm coaching. But there's many examples where I've run across young men throughout this my community who need a helping hand. quickly, just tell you the story. I helped this one kid while I saw him. He was trying to get a job, but he looks intimidating. This is a young, big black kid. He looks really intimidating. So you see him, you go, oh, this guy's going to be, he's going to take something from me. That's what you would kind of think, because he's intimidating, but he's not. And he was trying to get some money. He's trying to find a good job, and he's trying to get some money to take the bus home. So he's asking people for some money to take the bus home. He has to take three buses to get back to where he lives at. And I just came up to him and said, hey, man, what's going on with you, man? What are you asking for some money? What's up? And he said, well, nobody helps people like me. Mm-hmm. Nobody helps people like me. And I said, well, I'm here to help you. And I actually ended up taking him to his house, driving all, it was way over. I drove him about 30 minutes to where he lived. He took buses to get to where I was at. And I gave him some money and whatnot. And that's not even the issue. He said to me, he said, nobody cares about people like me. Mm. Nobody cares. He said, why are you even helping me? I don't even get it. And I got him some food that day. I got him some food, and he would not eat the food while we were. I said, why don't you eat the food? He said, no, because I need to go ahead and bring this home to my mom, too. So he wouldn't even eat the food. I said, dude, I got you, man. I said, let's go get some groceries. I got you. Man, it's a shame to have people that he would even be in that predicament and even that situation while he's trying to get a job. And by the way, it was bone-chilling cold out there, and he had on summer clothes.
I mean, Eugene, that is the kind of story right there when we're talking about being fathers in our community. That's definitely going to be our highlight for the weekend show coming up. Just thinking about, you know, as coaches and as parents and as teachers, what we can do in ministry. We're out of time this morning, but I really appreciate you coming on and just giving our listeners a sense of what we can do. And I guess we're in Vikings country here, Eugene, but go Carolina for the upcoming weekend.
Hey, man, look, I grew up a Minnesota Vikings fan. Fran Tarkenton and Chuck Foreman was my guys. And Chuck Foreman is the reason why I started to play football.
I love it. Hey, thanks for joining us, Eugene. Have a great week ahead.
You guys have to take care. Thank you.
Take a break here for Breakpoint and bottom of the hour news, and then we'll be joined by David Aikman next, and we'll talk about global affairs here on Faith Radio Mornings. Interesting break point on the heels of Eugene Robinson joining us in the first half of this hour and just talking about the need for parents, and specifically with Eugene about fathers. And for the people, it's one of those things that our faith is so often determined by how we care for those that are in need, including the widows and the orphans. So really appreciate both Eugene joining us as well as what happened there on Breakpoint. Well, up next, we've got Dr. David Aikman from Ireland, who used to be a journalist with Time Magazine the better part of 20 years, and he covers foreign affairs with us on Faith Radio Mornings. And I'll ask David about the possibility that China is using Amazon to spy on us in the United States. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Dr. Gary Stratton, and he was talking about fathers not exasperating their children.
One of the most intriguing verses in the New Testament is Ephesians 6:4, you know, do not provoke your children to anger. And I first started learning this with my oldest son. We just were always, both my wife and I, having conflicts at him where he would go really hard at something and we would just come hard back at him. And then it would just escalate and we'd end up with slam doors and screaming and yelling and strong discipline. And just thinking through this, somehow we are provoking him to anger. And so the next time he came in hard, and it was a turning point in my life, I came back soft and said, whoa, you're really upset, aren't you? And he went, yeah, I really am. And then he came back softer, and then I came back even softer still. Said, why are you feeling this way? And then he shared things out of his perceptions of the world, which were, I mean, they're childish, silly perceptions, but they're real to him. And it ended up with him in my lap crying, where the day before it would have ended up with screams and anger, and where I stopped worrying about, am I controlling the behavior in the moment, but to try to love them as God loves me.
Great invitation from Gary about parenting our children. I know as he was talking last Friday, I was thinking about that proverb that a gentle answer turns away wrath, and how important that is in any of our conversations. So head to myfaithradio.com and search for Gary Stratton. You can get that entire segment. He always has such wisdom to share here on Faith Radio Mornings on a Friday. Well, up next, we've got Dr. David Aikman on the line. I'm going to ask David a little bit about Spygate and whether China is spying on the United States through places like Apple and Amazon. And also, one of the headlines sent to me was that Krispy Kreme has come to Ireland, and oh dear, we'll get Dr. David Aikman's take on that next on Faith Radio Mornings.
I have three gorgeous grandchildren, ranging in age from infant to, it's hard to believe, middle school. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If you're lucky enough to have grandkids, you know the joy they bring into your home. But lest you be tempted to hide out in peace and tranquility of your home, remember this. It isn't a time to sit back and disengage just because your parenting is done. Your role is actually just beginning. Every day presents another occasion to invest in your grandchild's life. I strive to be a grandpa who's ready and interested in the lives of my grandchildren. As grandparents, you and I can make a difference for generations to come. Let's make this the best season of our lives.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. The uniqueness of the Christian faith centers on the resurrection. Here's best-selling author of The Case for Christ, Lee Strobel.
If I wanted to get at the question of whether Christianity or any other religion is true, if you want to boil that down to just one question or one issue, it would be the resurrection of Jesus. Because Jesus claimed to be the Son of God. He once got up before a group in John 10, verse 30, and said, I and the Father are one. Jesus was not saying, I and the Father are the same person. He was saying, I and the Father are the same thing. We're one in nature, one in essence. So Jesus made these divine claims, but so what? I could make those claims. Anybody can make those claims. But if Jesus claimed to be the Son of God, died, and then rose from the dead, then that's pretty good evidence he was telling the truth. And we see that in Paul's writings in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 17, where he said, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile. You're still in your sins. So that is the ballgame.
There's more from Lee Strobel at myfaithradio.com.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Well, Dr. Aikman, I can't think of a more fitting introduction this morning, given some of the headlines coming out of China that perhaps the United States is getting spied upon through technological realities within Amazon and Apple. I saw this headline. Good morning, and talk us through what's happening here.
It's quite extraordinary. I mean, it's part of the larger process by which China has been systematically grabbing chunks of American high technology for its own purposes. And now to see that the Chinese have installed a chip that can locate information about highly important parts of the American economy is just devastating. We hardly know where they're going to stop. In fact, they're not going to stop unless we take some measures to prevent it.
Well, and it seems like it shouldn't be such a great surprise using technology to spy like that. I know that there were some things trending maybe a couple of years ago in which people were encouraged to block off the cameras on their phones when they weren't in use. And I'm always a little mindful about Amazon Echo or a Google Home device that they are listening in through some of those mediums as well, as much as they deny it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I follow the dictum that I used when I was living in China. In fact, not only China, but Eastern Europe before that, always assume that every conversation you have is being listened to by somebody or other. It may be a friendly person, but it may just as well be somebody you'd rather not hear what you're saying.
Well, and I'd be curious your take, too. You're in Ireland, and I know Ireland has vast swaths of the country that are, you know, pretty much off the grid at this point. Do you suggest for people to really be careful about how much you are interconnected with the Internet and all the technology?
Yeah, I think the principles governing Ireland are the same as the principles governing the UK, that you have to assume that somebody somewhere is listening in on you. I mean, we know that the UK has GHQ, GCHQ, the eavesdropping device, which is the British equivalent of National Security Agency. So anything you say that is vaguely out of the ordinary can be misconstrued by people who are listening in precisely to catch you saying something out of the ordinary. It's quite intimidating.
Well, and I would imagine that all of these headlines coming out of China about spying potentially doesn't exactly help the tensions between the United States and China, where we saw some warships cross within about 50 yards of each other in the South Pacific. And, of course, we have the tariffs that are increasingly pressuring the Chinese economy. Where do we see this going with the United States and China?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I'm not a prophet in the sense that I can predict what will take place. But we do seem to be reaching almost a crisis point of confrontation with the Chinese in different areas. But let's separate the obvious threat that China constitutes for the United States in protecting the sea lanes of the South China Sea and building these artificial islands with airports and runways and missiles and so forth. That's one aspect of the overall global strategic rivalry between two major powers in the world, namely China and the U.S. I think more sinister is the way that China has acquired the habit of treating anybody of Chinese ancestry or birth or descent as somebody who has to pay respect and obedience to the dictates of the Chinese Communist Party. And if we can launch into that particular topic, the arrest of this gentleman, Meng Hongwei, the head of Interpol, I'm happy to do that at this point.
Well, I think it's important to get a sense of just sort of the rise of the tensions and what's there, because this is not going away. And whenever there's a global empowerment imbalance, and the United States exerts a lot of global influence, you're going to see the rise of resistance like that. So in just a minute or so before break, give us a little sense of what you just referenced.
Well, of course, Meng Hongwei is a Chinese national who was actually a vice minister of public security in China. And then he was seconded to Interpol, which is a respectable international organization. And he has been charged by the Chinese regime with taking bribes. And the problem is that this is all part of a much larger battle between Xi Jinping, the Chinese party secretary and the president, and a number of people in the Politburo, or formerly in the Politburo, who are considered political threats to him. Just a couple of years ago, he had a big confrontation with a man called Bo Xilai in Sichuan. And this man had an ally in the Public Security Bureau called, I'm trying to remember his name, but it'll come back to me. In any event, ever since taking power, she has been chasing down all of the allies of Bo Xilai who opposed him. And he's making it very difficult for them to survive anywhere.
Well, and it is fascinating to watch in terms of some of the global crackdowns that are happening, especially in China. And Dave, when we come back from break, I'd be curious to get your take on the Brazilian elections that were going on this weekend, where also we see possibly a strong man kind of taking over the country. Or is this more in the mode of President Trump? How do we see the situation in Brazil? And I'll have to ask you, too, about the fact that Krispy Kreme donuts have come to Ireland. That's one of the topics sent to me. So more to come with Dr. David Aikman here on Faith Radio Mornings. About 8 minutes for the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm joined on the line by Dr. David Aikman, and we talk each week on Mondays about some of the headlines around the globe. And Dr. Aikman, I know it's afternoon in Ireland right now, but did you wake up this morning with sort of anxious anticipation about being able to finally secure a Krispy Kreme in Ireland?
Well, I didn't actually lose any sleep about when that would happen. I noticed that a lot of Irish people and journalists were kind of commenting on it with some degree, well, relative degrees of pleasure at the thought that they could enjoy that stuff. Some of my colleagues here said, well, who cares about Krispy Kreme? I'd rather have the old-fashioned donut the way it used to be. So quite a mixed reaction.
I love it. Well, we sure appreciate you just giving us a perspective from Europe and even around the globe. And I don't know if you were following a little bit of the Brazilian elections this weekend. Obviously, they move on to phase two at this point with two remaining candidates. And one would be considered far more socially liberal, perhaps towards socialism. And another is fancying himself as the Brazilian Donald Trump. Where do we see this going over the next month or so? There's another cycle of elections. What's happening in Brazil?
Well, I think Brazil is following the trend of many countries in the world to head in one direction towards a more Europe-like social democracy, which has entitlements for every single condition. And the conservative reaction against that, which you could say mimics the Donald Trump populist response to sort of creeping socialism in the United States, I think that's a fair reflection of the balance of power in a lot of different countries.
Well, and I watched the candidate for president of Brazil more on the populist side start using phrases like fake news and that the media is against him there. Is this getting to be more of a global trend where when politicians don't like what the news is saying that they refer to it as fake news?
Well, I think it's more complicated than that. I think what you're seeing is a populist sense that ordinary common sense people are not being served by the elite who have been assumed to be running the country and who often think of themselves as being better or wiser than ordinary people to suggest how they live their lives. There's a general resentment in many countries of the world against a sort of ensconced, highly educated, if you call it that, bureaucratic ruling class that thinks it really knows better than ordinary people how things should be done. And I think Bolsonaro, the conservative candidate in Brazil, has tapped into this the same way that Donald Trump tapped into similar mood in the United States.
Well, it is really going to be fascinating to watch. There has been a global shift, and of course, with the American economy roaring at the level that it is right now, that tends to be that which wins elections. So I'm assuming that there's politicians again in Europe and even globally that would say, hey, if we can get our economy rolling like that, we have a chance to stay in power.
Absolutely. I mean, I think economic results are going to be more important than ideologies in determining election consequences in many countries of the world, no less in Brazil than in the United States. So we're going to have to watch this very carefully.
And Dr. Aitman, before we run, we have just about a minute left here. There was the Nobel Peace Prize award, the Nobel Prize awarded this weekend, and it, just give us a sense of who it went to. It was quite a compelling situation.
Well, it went to two people. One was a highly trained, very skilled, professional doctor in Central Africa who had saved a lot of women through surgery from the consequences of either forced abortion or female genital mutilation. And the other was a lady who was a part of the Yazidi minority in Iraq, who was captured by Islamic State and made to act as a sex slave for years before escaping. And she faced, I think, the most tremendously difficult hurdle of coming out and saying, I was a sex slave, it was terrible, and we must stand up against this.
Well, it's an incredible story, Dr. Aitman, to see who was awarded the Peace Prize. It certainly is current with our global headlines in terms of the sexuality and the slave trade. So I appreciate you coming on as you do each Monday and talking us through these global headlines. And I look forward to the week ahead. Hope you have a great time in Ireland. And we'll come back in just a minute and wrap up our show. Hope you enjoyed that hour with Eugene Peterson, the color commentator for the Carolina Panthers, and just the passion he had for fatherlessness, and also to, of course, Dr. Aitman gives us such great perspective. So we get our week started here this week, and it's getting a little colder and chillier around the Midwest. I hope you continue on your journey of faith, and we'll catch you tomorrow on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.